Good morning and welcome once again to Mornings for the Master, heard each weekday right here on the Gospel Radio Network. My name is Chris McAleer, and I'm your host every Thursday here on Mornings for the Master. Mornings for the Master has a different host each day of the week and a different course of study. And so you can avail yourselves to these studies as these programs are heard at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time each weekday. They are replayed at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time and then posted to the on-demand section of the Gospel Radio Network website in a day or so. On Thursdays, we are in the midst of a study of the book of Titus. And the last few weeks, we have been looking at Paul's exhortations to Titus in instructing the various individuals in the church. And the exhortations to sound doctrine have been there for the various groups, such as the older men and the older women, also the younger women, and today we're going to look at those exhortations for young men, a vital part of the church. We're going to be looking today at chapter 2, verses 6 through 8 in Paul's letter to Titus. Let's begin by noticing our text today. Chapter 2, verses 6 through 8. Likewise, exhort the young men to be sober-minded, in all things showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. So once again, as we've looked at in the last 3 weeks, our text today deals with things that are proper for sound doctrine. As we notice now, back to verse 1, but as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine. So Titus was to learn these things, to live these things, and to teach them, much like we find in the case of Ezra, in Ezra chapter 7 and verse 10. He is to live and to teach doctrine that is spiritually healthy, spiritually wholesome, that will benefit the Christian. And so, these exhortations to young men are going to be related to having godly conduct in their lives. As we noted in verses 2 through 5, the conduct that would be becoming for an older man or an older woman or a younger woman. Let's notice those now. Let's go back to verse 2. That the older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, in patience. The older women likewise, that they may be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. Examples to inspire each other is what they should be. To inspire each other to be fruitful in their service to our Lord and King. But now, we want to turn our attention to conduct that is becoming young men. Young men are to be sober-minded. They're to be sane, to be sensible, to be in their right mind. The implication would be that to be sober-minded is to think and to act soberly, to act discreetly, being one that will use sound judgment, one that lives in moderation and employs self-discipline. Now, this trait is also related to others. Older men, where it is translated as temperate in verse 2. And in young women, we see it translated as discreet in verse 5. Some versions use self-controlled, the ESV, the American Standard, and others. Young men are to have their minds and their passions in control and exercise self-discipline. It says, in all things, a pattern of good works. Now, we talk about a pattern. A pattern is a prototype, particularly of a pattern or model after which something is to be made. Consider Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 5. Who served the copy and shadow of the heavenly things, as Moses was divinely instructed when he was about to make the tabernacle. For he said, see that you make all things according to the pattern shown you on the mountain. And so that is gives us some understanding of why Paul would tell Timothy in 1 Timothy 4:12, that young man, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Good works, good deeds, noble deeds, useful deeds, good works in which Christ intends for us to be zealous in this area. Now back to Titus. Let's notice chapter 2 and verse 14. Concerning Jesus, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify himself, his own special people, zealous for good works. And then notice chapter 3 and verse 1. Remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work. A few verses later, notice verse 8. This is a faithful saying, and these things I want you to affirm constantly. that those who have believed in God should be careful to maintain good works. These things are good and profitable to men. In verse 14, and let our people also learn to maintain good works, to meet urgent needs, that they may not be unfruitful. Young men, with their natural strength and zeal, should set the pattern for good works and be an example to others. Now also notice that we're to be sound in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, and incorruptibility. Paul wanted Titus to teach the young men to display these qualities. Now, doctrine is the teaching or the instruction, according to Thayer. The art or manner of teaching, as well as that which is taught, may be under consideration here in what he means. Now, he first mentions integrity and incorruptibility. Integrity. Freedom from corruptible mixtures or adulterations. Titus was advised not to mix in his teaching or his thoughts in anything or way that would deprive the Christian teaching of its eternal value. To not do anything that would cause those others to place it second in their lives. Now, reverence, according to Strong, means gravity or honesty. The manner, according to Barnes, in which a preacher delivers his message should be such as to command respect. He should present good sense, undoubted piety, an acquaintance with his subject, simplicity, seriousness, and earnestness in his manner. That's Barnes. And of course, for incorruptibility, Thayer defined it as purity, sincerity, or incorrupt. Young men who teach should be concerned with purity of doctrine and presentation. These things are to be done, Paul said, with sound speech that cannot be condemned. Concerning sound speech, Barnes said, sound speech or doctrine, wholesome, right to use language that would be spiritually healthful. This would be similar to the sound doctrine that we noted back in verse 1. Young men should use speech that imparts grace to the hearers. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29 says, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. Colossians chapter 4, and verse 6 says, let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. We must use speech that cannot be condemned, blameless, according to Strong, irreprehensible, not worthy of condemnation, not to be condemned or blamed, especially by those who seek to oppose us or speak evil of us. Notice now back in Titus 2, verse 5, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. Young men are to also set the pattern in the kind of speech that they use. This is conduct that is becoming of young men. Though some would have us to think this way, youth is not an excuse for loose conduct or careless speech, the proverbial sowing of the wild oats. On the contrary, young men are to set the pattern for all Christians. And the Bible gives us many examples but to emulate in their conduct. So let's consider some of these now today. Examples to inspire young men. What about Joseph? Let's consider Joseph for a few minutes. Joseph was a young man who was betrayed by his brothers when he was young, and he was sold as a slave into Egypt. Go with me now to Genesis chapter 37, and a bit lengthy, but I think well worth our time. And let's consider Joseph. Genesis 37, beginning in verse 1 through the end of the chapter. Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. Also he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him, and could not speak peaceably to him. Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, "Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brothers said to him, "Shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed still another dream, and told it to his brothers, and said, "Look, I have dreamed another dream, and this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me." So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? And his brothers envied him, but his fathers kept the matter in mind. Then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, Are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. So he said to him, Here I am. Then he said to him, Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and bring back word to me. So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him, and there he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, What are you seeking? So he said, I am seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding the flocks. And the man said, They have departed from here, for I heard them say, Let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, Look, this dreamer is coming. Come therefore, and let us now kill him, and cast him into some pit, and we shall say, Some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams. But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands, and said, Let us not kill him. And Reuben said to them, Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. So it came to pass, when Joseph had come to his brothers, that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. And they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat a meal. Then they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing spices, balm, and myrrh, on their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brothers listened. Then Midianite traders passed by. So the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt. Then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. And he returned to his brothers and said, The lad is no more, and I, where shall I go? So they took Joseph's tunic, killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, We have found this. Do you know whether it is in your son's tunic or not? And he recognized it and said, It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted. And he said, For I shall go down into the grave to my son in mourning. Thus his father wept for him. Now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. So Joseph was mistreated by his brothers, betrayed, and sold as a slave in Egypt. But Joseph still maintained a pattern of good works. He maintained his integrity despite the circumstances in which he found himself. Chapter 39, verses 1 through 12. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight, and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had put under his authority. So it was, from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, Lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her, to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time, when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, Lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand, and fled, and ran outside. Joseph maintained his integrity. And God would use a young man such as Joseph to save the nation of Israel from famine. And we have other examples in addition to Joseph. For consider David. David, as a young man in his youth, was one who displayed a faith to overcome giants. 1 Samuel chapter 17. Notice verse 37, concerning Goliath. Moreover, David said, The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, Go, and the Lord be with you. Now drop down a few verses to verse 45. Then David said to the Philistine, You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beast of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So it was, when the Philistines arose and came near and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in the forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath, and killed him, and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Yes, God would make such a young man of integrity to be the king over the nation of Israel. So let's consider also the example of Daniel. In his teens, Daniel was honored to be trained for service to a king. Notice Daniel chapter 1, beginning in verse 3. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies, and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. We find that Daniel was determined not to defile himself, even at the risk of his life. Still in Daniel chapter 1, notice verses 8 and 9. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. Daniel maintained his integrity. And God would use a young man like Daniel to influence the most powerful man in the world. We certainly need to consider the young Timothy. Timothy assisted Paul as a young disciple. Notice Acts chapter 16, beginning in verse 1. Then he came to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there, named Timothy, the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed, but his father was Greek. He was well spoken of by the brethren who were at Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted to have him go on with him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in that region, for they all knew that his father was Greek. Youth was not to be an excuse for Timothy to not be sound and not to maintain good works and integrity. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. He served Paul as a son even to the last days of Paul's life. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. You, therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. Notice 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 through 9. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Be diligent and come to me quickly. Timothy would be with Paul till the end of his earthly walk. God would use a young man like Timothy to help Paul spread the gospel and establish congregations. But we don't have to look back thousands of years to find examples of young men who are sound and prosperous in integrity and good works. Young men who serve the Lord and His church with whatever the abilities they have are modern day examples. And I can think of young men that I know today who are great examples, who are serving the Lord on a daily basis, who are maintaining their integrity. Young men who are willing to learn, willing to develop the ability to teach. Young men willing to preach the gospel message. Young men that are willing to lead our singing, to lead our public prayers in the assembly. Young men who will resist the temptations of Satan. Young men who are willing to resist the lust of the flesh, to resist the lust of the eye, and to resist the pride of life. Yes, there are young men today that are willing to seek the Lord's will in their life first, willing to die to self daily, and to take up their cross and follow Jesus. So who will God use today? And the answer to that question is any young man who dares to follow the Lord in a world where the truth is out of season. The truth is, young men can do so much to benefit a local congregation. They benefit the congregation by their example. They have great influence upon others. They benefit the local congregation by their words. In a society where the words of so many are used to tear down, to denigrate, young men set a great example when their words are seasoned. They bring great zeal to congregations. Young men bring strength and energy. And also, young men in the prime of their lives have much strength, both physical and mental. And we must be careful, those of us that are older, to not despise their youth, to not disregard them, but to make efforts to involve, to include, and to benefit from their abilities and talents. And so we need to be, much like as Timothy was told, not to let others despise his youthfulness. 1 Timothy 4:12, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, and in purity. And this is especially true, most of all, when they are engaged in the Lord's work. Remember 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 10 and 11. And if Timothy comes, see that he may be with you without fear, for he does the work of the Lord as I also do. Therefore let no one despise him, but send him on his journey in peace, that he may come to me, for I am waiting for him with the brethren. You know, we should long to have elders in every congregation, as we learned in chapter 1 and verse 5, but we should also be just as thrilled to have young men who are just as dedicated in their service to the Lord. And so when we think about our lessons of the last few weeks here from Titus chapter 2, with these exhortations to older men, older women, younger men, and younger women, we see the vital importance of men and women of both age groups to the Lord and His kingdom. We must never neglect any group, any age group within the body, but let us instead engage, utilize, and let the church benefit from the qualities of faithful men and women, whether young or old. What a blessing the men and women that make up the church, our brothers and our sisters. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Now, next week, we will continue to move deeper into our study of Titus. We'll be picking up in chapter 2 and verse 9. Remember, our program today will be replayed this evening at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. It'll be posted to the on-demand section of the Gospel Radio Network website in a day or so. And remember to tune in tomorrow for the Friday edition of Mornings for the Master with your host, Brother Chip Horton. Always look forward to his programs. He'll do a great job as always, and I encourage you to tune in if you haven't been in the past. Stay tuned throughout the day for the programming here on the network. I promise you, it'll do more for you than what you might find on that television or on some radio station. So, avail yourself to these programs. Until we meet again, this is Chris saying so long, and I hope that you will have a great day and an even better one tomorrow, if the Lord wills. We'll see you next time.